Okay, well, hi there. Well, very unusual for me. I just got up. Actually, I got up like 30 minutes ago and took a shower. But there's a reason. The reason is that I kind of woke up closer to the middle of the night, inspired, you know, to do development for the Freedom from the Ego retreat. And then when that inspiration stopped, I noticed, wow, I'm tired. So I think it was around 10:30 our time. I went back to bed, got up at 11:30, took a quick shower, and here I am at noon. But as a result, I feel that, you know, that grogginess that I normally wouldn't feel this time of day, right? So I'm sure once I start teaching, that will clear away. But I feel more like being curled up asleep, which anybody who knows me knows I don't take naps, right? but my sleeping got all messed up today. So here I am, groggy. And maybe I made a mistake, because when I got dressed, let me see if I can show you guys what I'm wearing. I put on this sweatshirt and these sweats. So I'm probably a little too comfortable for waking up, right? the clothing, it certainly helps me want to just go back to bed. Shauna says, I'm so excited about what came through for our retreat next week. Yeah. She says her ego is not. Yeah. Yeah. We will be exposing the ego next week. And it's too bad you can't just jump on a plane and come. I know based on the last part of your teaching that I heard that you would absolutely love it. But let's move on. I did pick out a song for us to listen to. This is a song that came over the radio a few times while I was driving to my dad's and driving back. And I absolutely love it, but I hadn't thought about it in a couple years, so I was glad to have it brought back into my awareness. Let me share my screen. So, this is what they call a standard. I picked the one with Michael Bublé singing. It's called Feeling Good.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you might mean to know. Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. Thank you. stands of the pine. You know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine. And I know how I feel. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life. It's a new dawn. It's a new day.
Excellent. And today we're going to be looking at chapter 38 in the Tao Te Ching. And you know, I have four books here, so I was just kind of opening them all up and folding down the pages so they would open automatically to verse 38. And when I opened up the Wayne Dyer one, I found this little sticky note, which I don't know if it has anything to do with what we're reading today. I don't think it does. I think I was just using it at a book as a bookmark at one time. But it has two different definitions of heal. I'll go ahead and read them to you. One definition of heal is something is wrong that needs to be fixed. And the other definition of heal is I trust what I am and choose reversal of thinking. And I don't know when I wrote this little sticky note or why I wrote this down, but it's interesting because these two different definitions of heal will have a dramatically different effect on your experience. If you believe that healing, you know, healing the mind, there's something wrong and it needs to be fixed, you're actually still choosing the wish to be different, which is the cause of the ego in the first place, which means the ego is just going to keep right on going, just because your attitude about what healing means is mistaken. If you choose, I trust what I am, and I choose reversal of thinking as your definition of healing, your purpose is now completely aligned with letting go of ego, and you will have that experience. So I just found this sticky just now, and I think I'll probably go ahead and add this to next week's Freedom from the Ego retreat because it wasn't in there. I think it's so funny that I just found this sticky. So I'll go back to work after I finish teaching, but only the little tweak. I've really finished it. It's done, which is very nice. So now I can move on to working on other things. So today's verse is a little long, so I don't know if I will read from all four books. We would just be spending a lot of time reading, so we'll see what happens. It seems like I started with Derek Lynn, so I'm going to go ahead and use Derek Lynn. And again, this is verse 38. High virtue is not virtuous. Therefore, it has virtue. Low virtue never loses virtue. Therefore, it has no virtue. High virtue takes no contrived action and acts without agenda. Low virtue takes contrived action and acts with agenda. High benevolence takes contrived action and acts without agenda. High righteousness takes contrived action and acts with agenda. High etiquette takes contrived action and upon encountering no response, uses arms to pull others. Therefore, the Tao is lost. And then virtue. Virtue is lost, and then benevolence. Benevolence is lost, and then righteousness. Righteousness is lost, and then etiquette. Those who have etiquette are a thin shell of loyalty and sincerity, and the beginning of chaos. Those with foreknowledge are the flowers of the Tao and the beginning of ignorance. Therefore, the great person abides in substance and does not dwell on the thin shell, abides in the real and does not dwell on the flower. Thus, they discard that and take this. So, in a nutshell, I'm going to read the Stephen Mitchell version next because I think it's a lot easier to understand. But in a nutshell, this is talking about something that NTI points to somewhere in NTI Acts. NTI Acts has this section where it talks about when you start following guidance, you have to let go of the rules and the laws. And those rules and laws would even include, you know, the rules of etiquette, for example. Because it says those rules are helpful in a world where everybody is controlled by the ego. But the point is, those rules were put in place to control the ego. And if you're just following the rules that control the ego, you're not yet tuned into inner inspiration and what inner inspiration would have you do. You're just following the learned rules. And it's interesting because the learned rules can vary by culture, right? You know, so you're just behaving the way you were taught to behave, and there isn't necessarily any inner alignment at all with spiritual intuition. And so this is basically saying the same thing. It's saying that, you know, as we, I'll tell you what, let me just go read Stephen Mitchell because I think he'll say it better than me. This is Stephen Mitchell, verse 38. The master doesn't try to be powerful. Thus, he is truly powerful. The ordinary man keeps reaching for power, and he never has enough. The master does nothing, yet he leaves nothing undone. The ordinary man is always doing things, yet many more are left to be done. The kind man does something, yet something remains undone. The just man does something and leaves many things to be done. The moral man does something, and when no one responds, he rolls up his sleeves and uses force. When the Tao is lost, there is goodness. When goodness is lost, there is morality. When morality is lost, there is ritual. Ritual is the husk of true faith and the beginning of chaos. Therefore, the master concerns himself with the depths and not the surface, with the fruit and not with the flower. He has no will of his own. He dwells in reality and lets all illusions go. So let's just go ahead and look at Stephen Mitchell since he's a little easier to understand. And we'll just start at the top and go through the bottom. So the first thing again, the master doesn't try to be powerful, and he is truly powerful. It's interesting, this course that I, or not course, retreat that I just finished writing. I lost my thought. It's gone. It flew away like a bird. Let me read this again, see if it comes back. The master doesn't try to be powerful. It did. And he is truly powerful. Okay, it's interesting because what we're going to be looking at in this particular retreat is the subconscious. And in addition to looking at the subconscious, we're going to be looking at all of the defense mechanisms that we do to manage ourselves. For the purposes of the freedom from the ego retreat, the ego is going to be defined as the subconscious. Right. And we want to become free of the subconscious. But what's really interesting is the majority of our life and the majority of every human's life is spent battling the subconscious without them realizing it. And there's a long list of defense mechanisms we use in order to battle the subconscious. And it's also interesting because the more we battle it, the more we reinforce it. But let's imagine, for example, that I, like most people, have in the subconscious what I typically call the I am bad belief, but a specific format of that. I'll never be good enough, right? That lives in my subconscious. Well, then one of the things I'm going to do is battle the I will never be good enough belief by always trying to appear good enough, right? And that's really what this is pointing to when it says the ordinary man keeps reaching for power and he never has enough. Because what the ordinary man is doing is battling his subconscious. He is trying to appear good enough to himself, when what he actually believes about himself is that he's not. So his reason for trying to get power is trying to convince himself that he is good enough, right? The more power I get, right? He's trying to convince himself that he is good enough, when he still lives with a subconscious belief that he isn't good enough. So he will never be able to get enough power. Because no matter how much he gets, that belief is still there, kind of saying, nah, 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 not yet, you're still not good enough, nah, 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 nah. So he has to get more, right? Nah, 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 not yet, you're still not good enough, so he has to get more, right? It doesn't matter how powerful he gets, it's never going to be enough. Where the master, on the other hand, it says the master doesn't try to be powerful, and he is truly powerful. Well, the master doesn't need to try to be powerful because he has gone through the purification process. He has, in effect, cleaned out that subconscious. These false beliefs are not living in him anymore. So he has nothing to prove. You know, he can just be. And he can be moved by the Tao, and he can do whatever the Tao asks him to do, whether it's sleep all day, you know, or go work really hard on a project. It really doesn't matter. They're the same, because he's just following the Tao. And the Tao, as we know, is the one harmonizing corrective force in the universe. So because he has nothing to prove and he's just following the Tao, he's actually in touch with that one harmonizing correcting force in the universe. And what he's doing is incredible work without trying to do anything, right? Whatever the work is that he's doing, he's aligned with perfection. And therefore, the work that he is doing is perfect. So that's what these first two sentences say. The master doesn't try to be powerful, thus he is truly powerful. The ordinary man keeps reaching for power, and he never has enough. Now, the next paragraph is really extremely similar. You listen, you'll hear the same ideas in it. The master does nothing, yet he leaves nothing undone. The ordinary man is always doing things, yet many more are left to be done. So it's interesting because a master can appear to be very, very busy. You know, when it says the master does nothing, it's not really saying all masters sit around on park benches and enjoy the birds and the dragonflies and the fish in the sea, you know, like the song. You know, it's not really saying that's all they do is sit around on park benches. You know, the body could be very, very busy, but this is talking about the internal nature. You know, the master isn't here making up, you know, what projects need to be worked on next, what's wrong, what needs to be fixed, how can we get more control here, how can we get more growth here, how can we get more profit here, how can we, you know, the master isn't doing all of that. The master is just being. And as the master just bees, depending on that master's role, right, the universe then moves the master. So if there are a lot of projects being accomplished through the master, that's not because the master sees all of these needs that need to be resolved. It's because that's just how the universe is moving this particular individual, you know, taking advantage of the acquired skills and the talents and accomplishing all of this stuff. But the master is at peace. The master is sitting on the park bench, whether the master is sitting on a park bench or not. You know what I mean? Right? It's the internal attitude, the internal emptiness. So the master is always doing nothing, even if being moved about and doing a lot of different things. But again, the ordinary man sees all of these things that need to be fixed and changed all of the time. And it's really interesting because, you know, there's no end to problems when you go about things the way the ordinary man does, because of course the ordinary man is pushing the pendulum every time, you know, he or she sees something that needs to be fixed and then creates a way to fix it. You know, it's really interesting. It took me a while to get here, and I know it takes a lot of other spiritual students a way to get here, because, you know, spiritual students primarily perceive themselves as good, and they want good things for the world. And of course, they form their political opinions and their environmental opinions and all of this just like everyone else, and they think that what they want is the good. And it does sound really good to heal diseases and end wars and solve environmental problems. But the problem is, if you look with sobriety, with sober eyes, you'll notice problems have been solved forever. There are lots of problems that have been solved. And for every problem that's ever been solved, a new problem was born. You know, diseases have been, there have been diseases that had a huge effect on humankind that, you know, humankind went after and said, we need to fix this disease. And the disease, in some cases, has been completely eradicated. And then completely new diseases pop up. Not only that, the completely new diseases can be harder to manage than the previous ones. You know, like now we're getting these new, I guess it's bacteria, forgive me, I'm not very smart about it. Sometimes I use the wrong word, virus, bacteria. I don't really know the difference. But we know we're getting new viruses or new bacteria, where before we would have used penicillin or some other type of antibiotic, but now they're coming up, they're being born, the bacteria is being born already resistant to antibiotics. You know, so we had a cure, and now that cure is becoming impotent. So it's interesting, because at some point you realize that the problem-solving mind can only create a temporary appearance of fixes, because another problem is going to come to replace it. And when you see that the problem-solving mind can't actually get us to a harmonious world, which is what it's trying to do, right? Or a harmonious community or a harmonious family, you know, whatever. It can't actually get us there. Then maybe you can begin to surrender the problem-solving mind. And interestingly, that's the beginning of true problem-solving. Because the problem-solving mind was the one pushing the pendulum, which had it swing back and create the next problem, right? Push the pendulum, come back and create the next problem. This is why the teaching over and over and over again is to love everything as it is, to accept everything as it is, to be happy with everything as it is, to have gratitude for everything as it is. You see, when you're in love with everything or happy with everything as it is, you're not pushing that pendulum. You're not creating the problems. You see, that's what most humans don't understand. The very problems they're trying to resolve they're creating. By being the one who's at peace, the one who's empty, the one who's satisfied, that pendulum can come to rest. And then it's really interesting because once that pendulum comes to rest in you and you're genuinely happy with everything exactly as it is, you don't think anything needs to be fixed. You think the universe is moving in exactly the direction it needs to move in and you trust everything. Then these ideas might start popping into your mind that actually resolve some of these problems. But you know it's not you, right? It's the Tao. And this again is where spiritual people have trouble because what they want to do is they still want to fix the problems and then they want to credit what comes through them as the Tao when it came through their problem-solving mind. You see, this is where you've got to be extremely, extremely honest with yourself. Are you happy with things as they are? Or do you think they need to be fixed? You know, Jesus talks about this in A Course in Miracles, right? He talks about the miracle worker and he says all miracles, or no miracles actually, should be under conscious control. Conscious control would be, I see something that needs to be fixed. I'm going to be a miracle worker in whatever way I imagine that to be. And that thing's going to be fixed through me. He says that's severely misguided. Because you see, you're pushing the pendulum. A true miracle comes through one who didn't see anything that needed to be fixed. In fact, that goes right back. So maybe this did come while I was reading this. Maybe this inspiration came why I was reading this chapter, which is why it was written down and stuck in the book. Heal. The definition of heal, when I see something that's wrong and that needs to be fixed, that's not going to heal anything. I'm not saying that, you know, if I'm a medical professional and I dedicate my whole life to healing cancer, that I can't actually be a part of the team that heals cancer, because I can. I mean, you know, someday somebody will heal cancer. But then something else we haven't even imagined is just going to be birthed in its place. You see, it's not true healing. Real heal, I trust what I am and I choose reversal of thinking, right? I'm just being the miracle worker who is accepting the atonement for myself. That's my sole responsibility. That's all I'm doing here. And if I've already accepted that healing, then I'm just being still. Just being present, just being happy. But things may come through me, right? You have to be genuinely honest about, do you see things that need to be fixed? If you see things that need to be fixed, you should just be working on your own mind, right? To be honest, you're a part of the problem. You aren't capable of being part of the solution yet because you're still a part of the problem. And anything you do is going to push the pendulum. This, again, is why people have trouble accepting the Tao. They don't want to accept this truth. But all you have to do is look at the history of the world to see that it's true. I know I've asked you guys this before. Can you think of a single president who ever resolved all of the problems of his time so that when he went out of office, there were no problems? And do you think the next president is going to be able to resolve all the problems so that when he goes out of office, there are no problems? See, we're fooling ourselves. And when we see that, again, with sobriety, with sober eyes, then maybe we can start to settle in and start, instead of working with the problem-solving mind, start working with the loving all method. Or start working with chapter 15 of The Untethered Soul, the consistent commitment to happiness. So the master does nothing, yet he leaves nothing undone. The ordinary man is always doing things, yet many more are left to be done, because everything, every problem he resolves, is another problem born in its place. The kind man does something, yet something remains undone. So this, again, this kind man, this is talking about a person who, again, is battling the subconscious. This isn't talking about true kindness. This is talking about a person who has decided that the best way to overcome that sense of I'm not good enough is to be kind. Right? In fact, as I was writing the defense mechanisms last night / this morning, one of the defense mechanisms was called undoing. I had never heard of that defense mechanism, but once I read it, I realized, oh boy, I haven't heard of it, but I have used it. You know, like let's say I lose my temper with one of you guys. You know, I get really upset at something you do. I yell at you, or let's say I gossip about one of you guys, and then I start feeling guilty about the fact that I yelled at you or I gossiped about you. And so I try and compensate for that. I try to compensate for that by now being really nice to you, by inviting you out to lunch, being really nice to you, right? The kindness is still battling the subconscious. It's not healing anything. That's why the kind man does something, right? The kind man does something, yet something remains undone. That kindness was a type of pushing the pendulum. Right? I'm trying to undo my own guilt, undo my own sense of not being good enough by being kind. You know, motives are everything. This doesn't mean that kindness isn't important. I think kindness is critical. And in fact, Nisargadatta once said, if you aren't kind, you aren't even on this path. But you have to look at the why am I being kind? Am I being kind because I'm trying to compensate for the fact that I'm not good enough, or the fact that I feel guilty for something I did, right? Or am I being kind because I'm practicing a reversal of thinking? You know, it's about the motive. Let's say my ego, not me. See, when you're really doing this, you don't see it as me, it's my ego. My ego is really frustrated with one of you guys. And my ego is telling me, I need to give you what for. You know, you shouldn't have done that, and I need to go give you what for. And I see what my ego is doing, and I recognize that I do not want to feed that ego by giving it believing attention. Therefore, even while my ego's screaming at me to tell you that that was totally unacceptable and I don't ever want that behavior from you again, I instead continue to talk to you in a very kind voice without ever mentioning what my ego is talking about. You see, I'm not being kind to overcompensate for something or to compensate for something. I'm being kind because I'm choosing a reversal in thinking. And that subtle difference makes all the difference in the world. See, in one, you're fully believing the ego. In one, when I'm being kind because I feel guilty, I'm totally believing I'm guilty. I'm actually acting from guilt, even though that act may be kindness. Right? And I can see Don just got it. So if I'm acting from guilt, I'm reinforcing the belief in guilt. In the other, I see everything the ego is doing, and I'm choosing not to listen to the ego. That's a reversal in thinking. And in fact, those of you who have seen Revolver, that's what that foot of the bed scene is all about, right? The foot of the bed, his ego is telling him, kill him, kill him, kill him. And instead, he gets down on his knees and apologizes for being, quote, an idiot. You know, I apologize for being an idiot. I apologize for not respecting you. Right? He is choosing a reversal in thinking. You know, he's not being kind to compensate for guilt. He's not being apologetic to compensate for guilt. He's being kind and apologetic in order to transcend the ego. Can you see the difference? So a kind man does something, yet something remains undone. This is talking about he's being kind, you know, he's being kind in order to act a certain way, when actually there's deep beliefs that are the opposite. He's pushing the pendulum. He's being kind because he thinks his kindness is going to fix his guilt. Right? He sees something that needs to be fixed and he's trying to fix it. The just man does something and leaves many things to be done. You know, this is a man who believes in right and wrong. And of course, if there's right and wrong and you do something wrong, that makes you bad. So he's being right in order to be good, with the belief in I am bad still hidden down in there. See, it's the same thing. You know, people with strong beliefs in right and wrong can be very, very strict rule followers, at least most of the time. Everybody lies to themselves. Nobody's like following the rules all the time. Everybody lies to themselves. When you're listening to the ego, you lie to yourself. But in their own mind, they're very, very strict rule followers because that makes them good in their conscious, not really looking mind. You know, right? It's a way of denying their ego. It's a way of denying what they really believe about themselves. So again, even being such an incredible law-abiding citizen, because it's a defense mechanism for them, it's pushing the pendulum. They see something wrong that needs to be fixed, and this is how their personality has decided to fix it, by being this really, you know, pillar of the community. The funny thing about a lot of these pillars of the community, if you really look into them, a lot of them, it really is an act and a lie. You know, like there was some preacher, I can't remember his name, a Protestant preacher many years ago, really big guy. I mean, not fat, but, you know, really famous. A really big guy, and, you know, in Protestant television evangelism. And he was caught, I think it was here in Denver. He was caught in Denver in a hotel with a male prostitute and drugs. Now, it wasn't Billy Graham, it was somebody else. But he was caught in a hotel with a male prostitute. Now, think about this for a Protestant preacher, a Protestant evangelist. I mean, it's like the worst thing he could have done. And then there were drugs as well. You know, so his pillar of the community, this act, he was lying to himself. And then sometimes it collapsed because it wasn't what he really believed about himself. This is why it collapsed. And he would do the worst thing, the complete opposite, the worst thing from his belief system that he could do, because that's who he really thought he was the worst thing. Right? It's all psychological. And then he would become, I'm sure, the pillar of the community again, and he probably believed it. He probably believed he was making up for it, and then he couldn't hold on to the mask, and he would collapse and do the worst thing, you see? It doesn't mean that the man was actually even gay, believe it or not. You know, like there are some people who we would call naturally gay. This man, didn't, I mean, whether he was or wasn't, I don't know, but I suspect he wasn't. I suspect he was collapsing into the worst thing that his belief system believed in, you know, believed in as the worst, right? He couldn't hold up the act. He had to fall back into what he really believed about himself, which was he was this horrible, hideous creature. And that's what a horrible, hideous creature looked like with his belief system. The funny thing is, that's a, you know, that's maybe somewhat of an exaggerated example, but this is what the just man does. He pretends to follow all the rules while at the same time breaking the rules because he can't live up to his mask all the time. Right? It's too painful to lie that much to yourself. And the moral man is a lot like the just man, except to him, it's not just him. Everybody has to be this way, right? So the moral man does something, expecting everybody to be this way. And then when no one responds, he rolls up his sleeves and uses force. So an example of this might be if I thought, listen to the false belief, because again, some of these false beliefs are so tricky, right? If I thought meditation is what made us good spiritual students, okay, do you hear that? If I think meditation is what makes us good spiritual students, the hidden belief underneath it is that we're bad, we're not good enough. You hear? It's a compensation. So if I'm walking around with the belief that meditation is what makes us good spiritual students, I want us all to meditate because then we're good spiritual students and Awakening Together is the best spiritual organization out there, right? And then you guys, I find out you aren't meditating. If there's any way that I can, you know, use my force to get you to meditate, whether it's guilting you into it or, you know, or whatever, I'm going to do that because I need you to meditate in order to, for me to believe I'm good enough. I mean, you know, it's, and the funny thing is humans live their lives in this way. And again, this is what next week is all about. Maybe this is why I had to get up this morning and finish writing it, because I was going to be teaching this today. So I had to get up in the middle of the night and start writing. Who knows how these things work out? But humans live their entire life with these masks, trying to avoid what they really believe about themselves. And all that's happening is, you know, the pendulum just keeps swinging. The ego illusion just keeps continuing because there's no genuine healing going on. There's not genuine kindness. There's not genuine goodness, right? There's not genuine love. There's not genuine anything. Everybody's fooling themselves, avoiding what they really believe about themselves. So the moral man does something, and when no one responds, he rolls up his sleeves and uses force. I need you guys to do it for me to believe I'm good enough. This says when the Tao is lost, I'm going to call the Tao right now your connection to spiritual intuition, and that comes through emptiness. Through just being happy, just being. Right? When you are just being, there's nothing, you know, you don't have these false beliefs that you're not good enough, right? You don't have these false beliefs that, you know, the world is a dangerous place and you have to protect yourself. And if you don't, nobody else will, right? You don't have all that stuff in your system anymore. So you're able just to be and just be happy. And you're connected to spiritual intuition and the Tao is moving you. Right? That's perfection. That's harmony. But when that is lost, there's goodness. In other words, this is where the act starts coming. Now I have to act good. because it's not what I believe about myself. I have to put on a face for everyone else. And even more importantly, I have to put on a face for me. And when that goodness is lost, there's morality. Okay, now I need society. You know, I need society to help me hold up my mask. You know, whatever group I'm in, I need awakening together to be this really, I need everybody meditating. I need everybody donating. I mean, we have to look like the best spiritual students out there all to help me keep my mask on. God, right? When morality is lost, there's ritual. Now we're just showing up for weekly gatherings because that's what we do on Sunday. You know, in reality, I'm sitting here playing on Facebook. I'm not even listening. I'm just thinking, you know, it's just ritual for me. It's not even morality anymore. It's less than goodness, less than morality, pure ritual. I'm keeping up my face by showing up on Sunday. It says ritual is the husk of true faith. Now, a husk is what you throw away, right? When you, I guess, you know, the husk is around the seed. The seed has value, but the husk doesn't. So the husk, you peel off of the seed and you throw it away, right? So ritual is useless, is what this is saying. Ritual is completely useless to us. Ritual is the husk of true faith, the beginning of chaos. Now, I mean, and this is the beginning of chaos because at least when we were pretending to be good, pretending to be moral, we weren't going around shooting each other. You know, I mean, if we're totally listening to ego and we're not even practicing the ego mask of following the rules anymore, you've got chaos. This is why NTI says the rules are helpful, you know, as long as everybody's still listening to ego. You know, it's better than going around just shooting each other. You know, like I think you guys know my favorite TV show now is Gunsmoke. Well, hell, that's what they do in Gunsmoke. You know, one guy runs into another guy, hey, you ran into me. And then they stand off and somebody gets shot, right? Right? That's the ego without at least pretending to be good. You know what I mean? That's, you know, and we see that in our society. I saw a guy on the news the other night. I don't know what crime he did. They're looking for him because he did something. But he had tattooed across his head, crime pays. You see, he's not pretending to be good anymore. You know? So there's some benefit, at least physically, to if the Tao is lost, to putting on this good mask or this moral mask. There's some benefit to that. When that's gone, you know, that's when all hell breaks loose. But the master, let's return to the master, because that's what everybody else is doing. Everybody else is pretending to be good, pretending to be moral, or they're out there shooting up schools, right? But let's return to the master. I forgot to even look at the time. Thank goodness I still have time. I haven't glanced at the time once. I've been looking at you guys. Therefore, the master concerns himself with the depths and not the surface. The surface is the acting. The acting good, the acting moral, the acting kind. The master is looking in that subconscious. The master is practicing the purification. And the master is listening to spiritual intuition. The master is focused on the inside, not the surface. Doing the work until there's no work left to be done. And then the master is abiding in the true self, moved by the Tao. The master concerns himself with the depths and not the surface. Okay, thank you, Susan. With the fruit and not the flower. I think the representation here, and I guess I don't know this for sure, I wouldn't say I think, but I think the representation here is that the flower, you know, like on the apple tree, there's a flower. and then the flower blossoms and it may be really pretty, but it falls off pretty quickly. In fact, sometimes those flowers only seem like they're there a couple days. So the flower looks really good, but it has no substance to it. The fruit is the substance, right? The fruit takes longer to grow on the tree, right? The fruit is something that's maturing, right? So the master is much more concerned with spiritual maturity than, again, looking like the flower. And again, Jesus talked about this. Jesus talked about the hypocrites who, pray out loud in the streets. You know, when they're fasting, they oil their hair, make sure everybody knows they're fasting, right? They're really concerned with other people seeing how spiritual they are. They're not concerned with the true maturing of the spiritual development within themselves, right? They're concerned with the flower, how they look. So the master concerns himself with the depths and not the surface, with the fruit and not the flower. He has no will of his own. Right? And if he does, he's working on purifying it. So if I have no will of my own, then what can I want to fix? You know, what can I want to fix? Again, this comes back to the honesty I talked about. A lot of spiritual students want to, like, let's say the environment is their pet peeve thing. And they want to get their community into using, they understand, because they understand the problem with the environment, they understand that bottled water is better than the water that's coming through the faucet in their community. They understand people are going to buy water, but they're going to try and convince people to buy these big old jugs that get delivered instead of individual water bottles because, right, that's better for the environment. And so they're starting this campaign in their community to try and get everybody to get these big old jugs. And they're not profiting from it. They don't work for the company, right? But they want everybody to buy these big old jugs that get delivered and, get rather than the bottles. And they want to say to themselves, the Tao is moving me to do this, when it's not true. They see a problem that needs to be fixed. They have a will of their own. They're pushing the pendulum, right? The one who has no will of their own is just as happy if everybody's buying the little bitty bottles or using the big things of water or whatever, Whatever people are doing, and it's fine. And then if some idea comes through, maybe even to start a company that somehow does something, that did not come from them. You see, this is where we have to be honest. Do I have a will here? Is there something I am trying to achieve here? Or is this just coming through me? The master does not have a will of their own. He dwells in reality and lets all illusions go. He dwells in reality and lets all illusions go. That's all he's doing. So we have time to read the whole thing again. Let's do that. The master doesn't try to be powerful, thus he is truly powerful. The ordinary man keeps reaching for power, thus he never has enough. The master does nothing, yet he leaves nothing undone. The ordinary man is always doing things, yet many more are left to be done. The kind man does something, yet something remains undone. The just man does something and leaves many things to be done. The moral man does something, and when no one responds, he rolls up his sleeves and uses force. When the Tao is lost, there is goodness. When goodness is lost, there is morality. When morality is lost, there is ritual. Ritual is the husk of true faith, the beginning of chaos. Therefore, the master concerns himself with the depths and not the surface, with the fruit, that which matures, and not the flower. He has no will of his own. He dwells in reality and lets all illusions go. So that's the end of chapter 38. And Don, I will text you with the title. Thanks a lot, you guys. Good seeing you. I'm awake now so I can begin my day again. And I'll see you tonight.